Good afternoon. It's good to be here, and it's good to see so many friends from a variety of different areas and experiences. And it is true, I got to fulfill every young Hoosier's dream growing up in terms of vocation. I was commissioner of the Indiana BMV. And so I know we all write our fourth grade essays about that. Truth be told, it was a blast, and I loved it. I do appreciate the opportunity to be with you today, and it strikes me too on a day where many of us, if not all, have already voted, just to remark on the Rotary Club and the importance it has. I mean, throughout its existence since 1913, plenty of intersections, certainly with Riley Hospital for Children and University Health, and we're incredibly appreciative of that. But really, when we think of today's civic and political arenas, arenas that are too often defined or characterized by apathy, lack of engagement, lack of dialogue, what David Brooks, my favorite columnist, talks about, social isolation, right? I would say that we need Rotary Clubs and the like more now than ever, right? Where people can come together, develop community bonds, and look to improve civic life for the general community. And so I thank you just for being here and for the club and all that you do. My purpose today, I'm going to give you just a quick overview of Indiana University Health. I'm sure you're all familiar, but just a few numbers to kind of tell a story there, talk a little about system clinical services, and then really spend the bulk of the discussion here talking about telemedicine, which is a rapidly evolving, rapidly changing area. So IU Health, we are the largest system in Indiana, one of the nation's largest academic health systems, $7 billion in revenue, approximately 25,000 team members, and we are tripartite. We have a tripartite mission, meaning not only do we aspire to deliver great clinical care, but also train the next generation of clinicians, whether they be physicians, nurses, and the like, but also discover the next generation of treatments in medications, and you see there over 1,400 clinical trials year in and year out. Our mission here is to improve the health of the patients we serve in the communities that we serve through that tripartite mission of clinical care, excellence in research, and education. And this has been our mission for some time, although I would argue that we are more strategically focused on delivering this mission probably now more than ever as we move to this model of population health, and really looking to keep people increasingly out of the hospital and more appropriately manage wellness and manage health. System clinical services. So we were created in January of 2015 as an enterprise, as an organization. We went through a five-year strategy, including looking at how we were organized. And so we evolved into business units. Many of those business units or divisions are geographic in nature and anchored around a hospital. Save a couple of exceptions. One, our health plan, which is growing quickly, and this thing called system clinical services. And we did that because we realized that as more and more care migrates out of the hospital and into the ambulatory setting and into the home care setting, and as we compete against not other big, large health systems, but against smaller startups, national for-profits, that we need to have a dedicated focus on growing out this network of high quality but more convenient, more affordable services, and we need to be a little bit more agile and entrepreneurial in doing so. And so I love the work that we do. You can see the diversity of service lines here. No day is like the day before. And probably there's no better example of the migration, and I often describe our role as we need to be disruptors. We need to be disruptors from within our own system, right? IU Health has a rich history of success, but that's primarily been hospital focused. And we knew that the new model of care is evolving, and so we need to kind of disrupt that. If that means seeing patients over a video visit instead of our bricks and mortar clinics, so be it. If that means conducting certain surgeries in high quality, lower cost ambulatory surgery centers instead of hospitals, so be it. If that means seeing patients in urgent care instead of emergency rooms, so be it. We need to be disruptive from within and get us to evolve to this new model of care. And again, probably no place where that's more at the forefront than telemedicine. And so what is telemedicine? Involves the remote diagnosis and treatment of patients through a variety of technologies. And it spans both numerous types of care and platforms. anything from real-time virtual visits, either on-demand, i.e. I have some sniffles, I want to see a physician online, or a scheduled visit where perhaps I'm being treated for diabetes and the physician and I agreed that, you know what, next time we can have that visit over the iPad. Through remote patient monitoring, we'll talk a little about this more in the presentation, but I can tell you today, over at the Gateway building, we have a few nurses there that are monitoring trends of approximately 80 congestive heart failure patients who each morning are getting on the scale, taking their blood pressure. That data is transmitted where those nurses are seeing it and then intervening when appropriate to manage care and try and prevent hospitalization. And then asynchronous store and forward, so not necessarily real time, but where I'm submitting information, the physicians then responding. And then obviously various platforms as well too that seem to be growing by the day. Not going to go into the details of this chart, but what it suggests really is that consumers are, the uptake of technology in healthcare, the consumer use of technology is somewhat lagging other sectors for a variety of reasons, but we are beginning to see that change now, both because the technology is becoming more relevant, but also because the technology and innovations in other sectors are beginning to bleed over in terms of consumer expectations in healthcare, right? So we have generations now that are, they even know what a taxi is because they only know what Uber is. They know what Zappos is and on demand, and so they're beginning to have those very same expectations in healthcare. And I do think that there are three really transformational trends that will shape the future of telemedicine. Telemedicine in some form or fashion has been in existence since 1960, but I believe we are on the cusp of really an exponential curve of growth. And those three trends I'll talk about briefly here. One is this evolution from improving access to healthcare, and that's really where telemedicine has largely focused in the past. It will continue to play a role there, certainly in rural access, but also begin to expand into meeting needs for convenience and reducing costs as well. So on average, in our country, it takes us 20 days to schedule a 20-minute appointment with our physician, and that consumes about 2 hours of our time between the scheduling, the traveling, the visit, and so forth. Clearly, those expectations, or that would not meet expectations in most industries, and increasingly it's not going to be able to meet expectations in healthcare as well. Likewise, we've seen expansion from addressing episodic to chronic conditions of care. So if you think about telemedicine, at first it was focused on treating acute episodes of care. So maybe it was telestroke or a trauma consult from a rural access hospital to an academic health center. Well, the fact of the matter is we have 140 million Americans today with some chronic disease, and that's driving 80% of our healthcare costs. So increasingly, telemedicine is going to play a role in helping to manage care for those patients as well and to reduce costs. And you see all three of these are kind of linked together. And the last is migration from hospitals to clinics in the home setting. So today we have 2 million elderly citizens that are homebound and want to receive care in the home. And telemedicine can play an increasing role in doing that. And so those trends combined are really going to help shape and change what telemedicine has looked like over the past 40 years. Now, having said that, there are some limiters. There are some barriers as to the uptake of telemedicine. And so you see here, this was a consumer survey conducted by Deloitte. And they ask these consumers, what are your concerns? What are your limitations? What causes gives you pause to use telemedicine? And really, they center around themes of skepticism. Will this work? Quality. Will the clinician really be able to make a good diagnosis? Insecurity. Will my data, will my information be secure? And so that's something that we need to be aware of as we move into this space. Likewise, beyond those kind of social and emotional barriers, there are environmental barriers as well. So reimbursement is a big one. So there are 29 states now that have some type of coverage parity laws, meaning, hey, you got to cover telemedicine services. But those laws vary, and there's still a negotiation that needs to occur with the payers to actually get reimbursement for that. 48 Medicaid programs cover telemedicine, all with their different stipulations. And then if you take a look at the most recent that I saw, which was 2012-2013, at that point, Medicare spent $5 million on telemedicine services. That is less than 1/1,000th of 1% of Medicare spend. And so clearly, the reimbursement sector needs to catch up with the technology and what's possible and available now. Regulatory environment, if you take a look at credentialing, so credentialing physicians, licensure and so forth, a lot of catching up there to do today as well. We're looking to begin to offer second opinions to people, including people out of state. Well, to do that, then we need to go and get certified in each state, get liability insurance coverage in each state, and so forth. And so lots of catch up to do there. That today limits the uptake of telemedicine. There's also a lack of published studies in this sector, and there's a challenge here because the life cycle of research is pretty lengthy. And so oftentimes, once a study is complete, the technology it was studying is already obsolete. But the fact of the matter is, there isn't a rich data set of literature out there showing demonstrable outcomes with a lot of these technologies. And then the last and probably the largest barrier is the so-called digital divide, right? And this primarily centers around geographic and social factors. So the fact of the matter is, if I live in a rural area, if I'm older, or if I have less education, I'm less likely to have access to technology. And it just so happens that those three factors often also have a correlation to likelihood to be sick, to have chronic conditions, and to be able to use these types of technologies too. And so we need to figure out how to close that divide in order to realize the opportunity of telemedicine across these various settings. Having said all this, I really do believe we're at the tipping point. So if you look over time, you've had this kind of gradual growth in telemedicine services, and I think we're getting to a point where we're going to hit that exponential part of the curve. I do, and I think that for a variety of reasons, but a few here cited in terms of evidence. You know, one, the evolution of the family. So what do I mean by that? You have somewhat of the breakup of the traditional extended family, and you have increased mobility of that nuclear family. And oftentimes, the children are very mobile, right? So mobile and they're technology savvy. And so in having said that, we also know increasingly that the elderly they don't want to go into a hospital, they prefer not to go into a nursing home, they want to remain in their home setting. And so that's going to really create a significant demand for home monitoring, home telemedicine services in a way that they can also be communicated back to the caregiver, whether it be their children in another state or something along those lines. Also peripherals. So what do I mean by that? Well, one, you know, they forecast by 2020 or so that 90% of the world's population will have one of these, some type of smart device. And nearly a week goes by where I don't see some type of new peripheral or some type of sensor, whether it be the iWatch or more sophisticated technologies that allow, one of the members of our telemedicine team bought a peripheral that actually allows him to look in his kid's ear. That data is then transmitted to the physician on the other side of that video and be able to make a diagnosis based on that information. And so the technology and the peripherals and the sensors are catching up, and they're going to create increased use cases for telemedicine. Venture capital funding. So venture capital in the digital healthcare space. In 2011, $1.1 billion was spent in venture capital for digital health. Fast forward to 2015, that 1.1 grew to $4.3 billion. So tremendous growth there because people are seeing the opportunities here, lots of money being invested in new technologies, new uses, and we expect to see those come to fruition. And the last, I just cited a couple examples here. The VA last year conducted more than 2 million virtual visits. And Kaiser, kind of a unique health system in that they're a health plan provider and a healthcare system, but they forecast by 2018, so within 2 years, that they'll have more visits conducted virtual using telemedicine technology than in person. And they're on the growth curve to be able to deliver that. So those combined to give me evidence that really make me believe that we are on this tipping point where we can begin to see, likely see, exponential growth in this area with some breakthroughs in technology. That's further exemplified here in this advisory board slide that just takes a slice of telemedicine and shows some pretty aggressive growth here. The one exception I would say is I don't think it will be linear. I think you will see exponential growth in this space. So IU Health, what does this mean for IU Health? What is our approach to this? And so we are pursuing telemedicine, again, covers various platforms and technology, and so we're pursuing several aspects. So late last year, we launched virtual video visits where, again, if I have an infection, a bug, a rash, I can download an app, sign in, and see a physician right there. I can tell you one Catherine Stiver took advantage of that, my wife, and in her eyes, there's maybe nothing better I've done in my time at IU Health than that. And so that was initially, we launched that in late 2015, just to really our own team members and cover dependents, because we wanted to really make sure that we get the quality right, that we can have the same level of confidence, the same mechanisms, monitoring, and so forth, to ensure that we're delivering the same type of quality in this setting as we are in other settings. And so we've moved very thoughtfully at a moderate pace. So we launched again to our own team members, begin to expand that to other IU Health plans or health plan members. And then July 1 of this year, we finally launched it to the broad marketplace. And so primarily we focused on on-demand visits again. So I have an ailment and I go in and I enroll and I download the app and I can then conveniently see a physician. But increasingly, we're doing it now in our physician offices, both primary care and specialists, a lot actually in behavioral health, where we're conducting scheduled visits using the same technology also. Virtual chronic care. So I mentioned 80 congestive heart failure patients today are being monitored with this technology, information coming back, and they're managing interventions. We think we're just at the tip of the iceberg there, that there is tremendous opportunity to expand that not only to more congestive heart failure patients, but to other chronic conditions, and to couple this remote monitoring technology with video visit capability. And so I had the chance to go to Banner Health out in Arizona, large system, multi-state, headquartered in Arizona, but it goes across several western states, where they have a physician, a pharmacist, nurses, other caregivers, all right there, who's a virtual team that monitor these trends, but then something happens, that physician pops on the screen, has a dialogue with that physician or with that patient right there while they're in their home. And so we are very excited about the opportunities here to better manage, help people manage their complex and chronic conditions, ideally keeping them out of the hospital and keeping them well. Hub and spoke, second opinion. So what I mean by hub and spoke, so we have lots of requests. A recent one is we signed an agreement with Schneck Hospital down in Seymour, Indiana, where we'll provide nephrology services via this hub and spoke, via this virtual technology. So there'll be a primary care physician in the room with the patient down there. They will then video in our nephrologist and we'll be able to give counseling and advice in care through that mechanism. And that example is repeated over and over again across these different hubs and spokes. Riley dermatologist provide pediatric consults to kids in Evansville right now through a partnership with Deaconess Hospital. And so these literally look, it's beginning to look like one of those airline maps in those magazines where you're seeing all these spokes begin to come off there and these relationships develop. I mentioned second opinion earlier, so we're going to be launching a second opinion service. And then last is this e-acute care. So intensive care units, what you're seeing now is a lot of places across the country have eICUs, not totally replacing the normal ICU, but where there is basically a station off campus with all these screens up there monitoring all the trends of eICU patients, providing another set of eyes beyond just those nurses and physicians on the unit to provide care. And what we've seen there is that really, in cases, has improved quality, improved length of stay, and had a significant impact. And so we're going to be looking to do that more earnestly, not only within our own system, but to offer that to other healthcare providers across the state and beyond. And so very exciting, multiple fronts, a lot to do here, and we're We were disrupting a lot of existing models of care, and so you can imagine the change management inherent in doing some of this stuff. But we firmly believe that this is the way, where healthcare is going. Again, I'll emphasize, we're very careful just to make sure that we're delivering the type of quality and experience that is commensurate with the IU Health brand. We think that's incredibly important, that we have a responsibility and a role to play in doing that. So just a few results to date. So of the video visits, so again, I call it the softest of soft launches. Late last year and then beginning in July, we began to communicate more broadly to the marketplace. We've had now close to 2,500 individuals enroll in IU Health video visits, meaning they've downloaded the app, they're enrolled, they're ready to go, so all they have to do is press the app. They'll see a registration clerk and get in to see a physician. We've had 230 visits conducted in a median wait time of 10.4 minutes, which, you know, beats that 20 days by a decent margin. And so we've actually seen, we were very slow there up front because we wanted to make sure the technology was there. And then since we've launched publicly in July, that's where the majority of this activity has occurred. And so again, we expect much, much more to come. So I went through that. Hopefully, Kelly, I met my time. Okay, good. All right. So if I'm given less time, I don't reduce the slides. I just talk faster. But that hopefully gives you a feel for where we see the telemedicine marketplace heading and how IU Health is trying to realize and fulfill some needs within that space. And so having said that, if we have time, Kelly, I'm happy to answer any questions.